Welcome to episode 70 of Bulls Gold on January 9th, 2020. I'm Edward Schuler, joined by Salim Sudawala. Salim, how's it going today, man?
It's good. It's been an interesting week. We've had a couple of games here. I figured we could talk about those, you know. That'd be good to get our thoughts on that. And outside of that, I've been, you know, busy with work. Just kind of been dragging a little bit, getting over that cold. That's about it. How about you?
Things are going well. I wish I could say the same about the Bulls, but last night felt like, there's been various points of a season where it's felt like the end, like the absolute end. I mean, you can even go back to like November, some points in December, but I feel like yesterday's loss against the Pelicans felt like the absolute end. Hell, I think you could say that this week, just based on the events that have transpired, has felt like just the absolute end for this team, and particularly what happened in the Dallas game and how they lost the Pelicans game, right?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, so against Dallas, they were very competitive, and you saw some hope, and it's like, oh man, they played nice, you know. And you know, the Luka was Luka. It's not much you can do about that. You figured he was going to do what he did. And they just couldn't. I mean, late in the game, Dallas kind of took away. So you figure, okay, going against the Pelicans, this is a winnable game. You know, this is a team that while they're not, I wouldn't necessarily say they're worse than the Bulls. They're probably equal. But you figure, you know, you could get this win. You could be more as competitive as you've been playing with against some of these teams. You can steal a game or win this game against the Pelicans and end this losing streak. And they had a very lackluster first half, just an ugly, unwatchable first half. And then in the second half, they just completely got, you know, outplayed, and they ended up losing by double digits two against a team that is not as good as teams that we've been playing recently.
Yeah, that seems to be the trend with this team. They start off reasonably well, and they progressively get worse throughout the game. And a lot of people seem to theorize that is because teams make adjustments to how the Bulls are defending. And as we know, the Bulls, I think that's also in combination with the fact that the Bulls are one of the worst offensive teams in the league this season. So it's the Bulls have to get in rock fights to be competitive in games, right? They have to keep it very ugly, and the games, in a sense, have to emphasize the quality of possession, because we've seen that in the past when we had Tom Thibodeau here. And Tom Thibodeau, when they didn't have Derrick Rose for a while and it was Joakim Noah leading the offense, and this is before Jimmy Butler broke out, but they would always have these slow, turtle ball, methodical games where it was just a rock fight. It was grimy. They used that word a lot, grimy. And that was the only way they could compete to win games. And this current Bulls team, while not as talented as those, they're trying to mimic that same thing, but it does not seem to be working for them against quality teams. And to go back to the fact that they're progressively getting worse throughout the game, when you look at how aggressive his defense is, and we've talked about this throughout the season, about this blitzing, you know, pick and roll scheme where it's a lot of trapping, it's a lot of gambling for steals, and they're forcing a lot of turnovers, but opponents start to adjust and they start getting wide open dunks, or they start getting a lot of these corner threes. They start getting very high percentage shots. So it becomes a situation where the defense you're playing is very high risk and high reward. And as the game goes on through these crucial moments, that high reward starts to come out, but not for the Bulls, for the other team, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there's always like annoying things that happen during the game too that kind of just, it's like, we don't need to be doing this. It's like when against Dallas, you have, you know, Chris Dunn gets a late steal, and they're down double digits left. He steals them and lays it in, and then he's talking smack to the bench. Dallas's bench is like, come on, Chris. What are you doing, dude? Like, Luka just had a 30-point triple-double on us, and we're down by double digits. Why are you talking trash to Dallas's bench? Just shut up and get back on defense again.
Yeah.
And then obviously you have just the lack of like hustle on nights against the Pelicans yesterday, and lack of like you know, execution, and it's just annoying. It's just really annoying. And then you have that, again, the weird situation against Dallas, again, I'll bring up, is Boylan with his not taking that time out to get Gafford out, and it just looks so bad. Like, this, our players writhing in pain, and the opposing coach is more concerned about our player than Jim Boylan is. So it just, so many different things, like the bad basketball, and then those other little antics just add everything into it, and it just makes everything so much worse.
Yeah. You know, it seems as we talk each week, it always seems like in the back of your head, you're just like, there's no way Jim Boylan can top what he just said or did. And then each week he tops himself. Like, it's really impressive what he's done over the season. I mean, he just tops himself with new things over and over and over again. And obviously the Bulls are suffering for it. But I think the key thing, and we were talking about this before we started recording, is that while it makes no sense for this Bulls team to be largely competitive against Dallas, because they were competitive against Dallas during this game before they pulled away, but then New Orleans had a 20-point lead against them. And New Orleans, as you were telling me, is they're not as good a team as Dallas. So how do you get blown out on the road against New Orleans, but you're competitive against Dallas? Like, I don't know. It's such a weird thing that happens there.
Yeah, it's really odd. I mean, you have some positives. Like, we've been talking about, you know, I tweeted out from our account how Zach's been playing better. We've seen the development in him, I should say. And we've seen him play better defense this year. He's not good, don't get me wrong, but I think we've seen improvement compared to years past where he's a complete, like, shiv defensively. Hmm. Offensively, he's back to being an efficient scorer, high volume scorer. We see good things from Daniel Gafford, the putbacks, the defense. I mean, he had a really nice sequence. I think against Dallas it was, where he had the block on one end, and then he ran back on on the offense to hustle back and got a nice putback. Or, I don't know, it was a putback, or it was a nice pass he took from one of the guards, maybe, or something like that, mm-hmm. and dunked it in.
Yeah.
So we're seeing some good things. But it's just not enough to really, you know, get you excited overall, because we're seeing so many inconsistencies from Lowry, and so many inconsistencies from Kobe. Guys are just in and out of the lineup, constantly getting hurt. Now we're going to be without Wendell for a month. Yeah. So it's just a lot of mixed stuff right going on with that as well.
And that's big. Wendell Carter Jr. being out for multiple weeks is insanely big. The Bulls' chances of making the playoffs were already slim to none. But without Wendell Carter Jr., who is easily the team's best defender, I would argue the most valuable player on the team and most impactful, especially his communication on defense and what he's basically a do-it-all defensive big. Without Wendell Carter Jr. in the lineup, basically anchoring this high-risk, high-reward defensive scheme, you don't really have much to rely on. They started Lowry Markin and Thaddeus Young against New Orleans, but the thing with Lowry is that while he can play center, he shouldn't really be playing center because he can't defend. He doesn't have those instincts. He doesn't have that communication, doesn't have that help defense. And you saw it last night, the Bulls defense overall really just suffers. And once we keep playing good teams more and more, it's just going to keep getting exposed. And while we expect Daniel Gafford to have a more significant role with Wendell Carter Jr. out, Daniel Gafford just isn't the same level of defender. He just doesn't have the same instincts, doesn't have the same fundamentals, doesn't have that same feel for a position defensively. So this Bulls team, logically, is probably going to crumble without Wendell Carter Jr. So what did you make of how this team against New Orleans tried to play without Wendell Carter Jr. by starting Thaddeus Young, by starting Lowry Markkanen at center? Do you expect Young and Markkanen to continue to start, or do you think at some point, I mean, depending on if Wendell is out for a month, 2 months, or misses the whole season, do you expect at some point Daniel Gafford might eventually get inserted into the starting lineup?
Yeah, it's tough. It's so tough. Like, I don't like Lowry playing center for such a long period of time because he'll make the defense a lot worse being in the middle end because he's not a good defender. He can't really protect the paint. He's not going to help if guys, you know, miss an assignment on a perimeter. He's not really going to be a good help side defender. Thad, again, like we talked about last time in our podcast, we're saying how playing him at the three for so long is just not, it hasn't really worked out well because that's not the type of role that he's accustomed to playing in this league. Mm. He's not a guy that takes threes and, you know, can create on his own. He's traditionally been, you know, a four in a sense where he plays inside the paint, and that's around that 10 feet and inside is where he really has been mostly successful from. So, but at the same note, then when you get so thin, if you start, if you start Gafford, that was a scary thought. Is like, are you gonna have to rely on minutes from Felicio?
Yes.
So that becomes the other scary part, right? Then it becomes a real circus with him getting minutes and doing Felicio things, you know?
I don't know. His G League highlights are looking kind of good right now.
G League highlights. They are. And then he comes up here and thinks it's the G League cell and plays like a complete, like, you know, train crash, yeah. Car wreck, you know, in a sense. But it's so tough, like, right? So if you start, like I said, you start Gafford, then who's going to come in behind him? Because, like, Cornette is another guy, you know, is another guy. We can't really rely on him. Him and Cornette and Felicia are probably equivalent, except Cornette can hit threes.
Yeah. That sucks.
Go ahead.
That sucks how that turned out, because I actually liked the Cornette signing when in the offseason happened, and he just hasn't been effective at all.
Exactly. I mean, I guess the other issue with Cornette is the way we play defense is not, he can't play defense that way. The blitzing, yeah. He can't blitz. He's better in the drop back defenses where he's just in the paint and recovering, and that's how he's been able to be a good shot blocker. Last season he was what? I think he had averaged 1.5 blocks a game or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's generally how he plays better on the defensive end when he's kind of used as a drop back big, not being asked to blitz, you know, the guards and double team on the perimeter and things like that.
Yeah. It's basically the kind of way the Bulls defended with Pau Gasol in the lineup. Now, the thing with Pau Gasol was that because he had to drop back so far, the Bulls gave up a lot of open shots off that pick and roll because you can't have Pau Gasol, like, approach the guard because that guard's just going to drive right past him. So you basically had to have him sit back and hope that the guard drives towards the rim so Pau can swat the ball out of there. But as you mentioned with Luke Cornette, they've basically been playing the same defense, which is inadequate to his playing style. And one of the things that Casey Johnson was tweeting about today is how the Bulls, you know, of course he was talking about how the Bulls are going to play without Wendell Carter Jr. And he said that Jim Boylan is really big on being able to maintain this defensive system even if somebody goes out. And that scares me because I just don't see how you can do that with what you have. And it just seems like it seems like you're trying to, like, stuff a circle into a triangle. Like, it just doesn't really work. I don't, like, if they're trying to play a system where Daniel Gafford and Luke Cornette and Lowry Markkanen are going to be trying to blitz and try to communicate and try and anchor this thing, it's just not going to work. They have to figure out something new defensively, but even then, that's going to be tough because, I mean, you're mid-season and you're basically just going to have to, you know, throw away pretty much the defense you were working with most of the year.
Yeah, and do you think we'll adjust at all to Cornette the way he can defend? That's the thing that I don't think he will.
Yeah.
But, like, what do you see? Could you see him maybe adjusting a little bit?
No. No, not at all. I mean, I think he had opportunities when Luke Kornet was actually a part of the rotation. I think he had opportunities to adjust the defense to fit Luke Kornet, but he never did. And Luke Kornet just kept getting abused on pick and roll. It's just like you, when you're watching the games, you're sitting there and your immediate reaction, of course, is going to be, man, Luke Kornet sucks, dude. I thought he could defend. And it's just like, yeah, I mean, he can block shots, but he's clearly not being put in a position to defend at a competent level because he's in a defensive system that doesn't fit him. So naturally, you're just saying, okay, Jim Boylan, when are you going to make that call to adjust it so that Luke Kornet can at least stay on the floor a little bit, you know, a little bit when we put him in? But I don't know. I just don't see how – I don't think that they're going to adjust. And based off what Jim Boylan has done this season, if he does adjust, I worry that it's not going to be a good one.
I agree. And the defense is, you know, it's going to get so ugly, man. You mentioned it.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm thinking, because I'm looking, here's a tweet Tony Gill tweeted out about each defense by quarter. So in the first quarter, they're second in the league. In the second quarter, they're seventh in the league. In the third quarter, they're 14th in the league. And in the fourth quarter, they're 16th in the league. So, again, just like the offense and everything, each quarter we get worse, worse, and worse, and worse. Now, without Wendell, oh, my God. Like,
it's going to go in the tank.
we're going to start seeing a lot more blowouts again. That's what's coming, right?
Yeah. Wendell Carter Jr. is third in the league in defensive RPM at the center position. He is, like, he's quietly become one of the better defensive centers in the NBA. And he's only 20 years old, so it's really impressive. But his value should not be understated to this team. Like, yes, this Bulls team isn't very good, but Wendell Carter Jr. does so many things on the defensive end that don't show up on a box score. And when you take him out, you just don't have that because there's no one else on this team that can do everything that Wendell Carter Jr. can do. There's no one that can switch like him. There's no one that can communicate like him. There's no one that has those feel for the game, that basketball IQ defensively like him. It's just not there. So even if Otto Porter Jr. comes back in the next few weeks, you're still without a really big piece of your team, because with the way this Bulls team is set up right now, they have one of the worst offenses in the league. And now their defense projects to probably be mediocre or maybe average at best on a really good day without Wendell Carter Jr. So it's, how are you going to win games? I mean, I guess the answer to that is you're not going to win games.
Yeah, I agree. Let me ask you another question here about Coby White. We've talked about Coby a lot this season, and we both, again, our guys that like Coby, we like what his future can be. But we see the way he's been coached this season, and we've had concerns about the way he's been coached and been given a green light to do whatever he wants. When do you think that you will be saying, like, you know what, whatever, screw it, just start Coby? Are you ever going to get there this season, or do you still think you want to see him being reined in more and being still coming off the bench? Let him get his role in the way he's playing, but kind of just let him keep coming off the bench.
So theoretically, I could absolutely see a situation where it's like March and the Bulls are just out of it, and you're just like, bump it, like full on youth movement. Let these guys play. Let's see what we got in these guys. You know, kind of like what happened last season when they were starting, like Walter Lemon Jr. and all these other guys, like just throw him to the Wolves and see what happens. But I think the thing with White is that while you would love to see him start, it's just that he's not running offense. He's not really facilitating anything for anyone. Like this season, and granted, I still like Coby White and I think he's going to be a really good player, but this season for White has essentially been, as you said, unconditional green light. Don't really worry about passing or making anyone better. The problem with that is he's been insanely inefficient. So I don't see how starting him makes that easier, especially when he's going to be playing next to Zach LaVine. And both of these guys have been really high usage players for the Bulls. So it's just, they To me, Coby White should have been scaled back a long time ago, and I don't understand why they didn't. They should have called. I feel like they should have given him less responsibility. That way, he can play off the ball a little bit more, be a good team defender, and maybe have some more high percentage shots for himself. But it's just I'm so puzzled as to why they just given him this green light permanently, and they're basically just saying, "Hey, whatever problems he's having, he's just going to shoot his way out of them." And it just hasn't worked. So to me, if everyone is healthy, if Otto comes back, I'm still not starting Coby White. I bring him off the bench until Coby White shows signs of being able to run an offense at a passable level. Because I mean, he's not going to be a pro at it, but at least a passable level. I just don't think you can do it right now.
And honestly, a lot of times it seems like when he's come in, they don't really have him run an offense in a sense. They just have him go freelance out there. Yeah. Like I would feel more confident and comfortable saying, yeah, let's start Coby if we saw him, consistently being running pick and rolls with bigs and doing things like that. But we don't. And it's always been Coby spot up off the ball. When he has the ball in his hand, he's kind of dribbling around and then creating a shot off the dribble.
Yeah.
So that's like you said, that's the concern. It's like there's not been any thought about him developing his point guard skills, and it's just been, hey, go out there and just play.
Yeah. It's like getting a new job and they just kind of say, all right, go do your thing. You're just like, wait, I don't even know what we're supposed to do yet. And it's like, we'll figure it out. And they just let you do it for months on months and months, and it's just like you never really learn anything. Every other day you might be right about something. I mean, a broken clock is right twice a day, but you're not really learning anything. You're not really developing. And that's pretty much what Coby White is doing. The good games he's had, maybe four or five, maybe six good games. And, to his credit, some of those games have actually won the Bulls games, but it's not in the sense that Coby White has figured it out. It's because when you're in the game and you're chucking so much, it just comes with the territory. Eventually, you're going to have a really hot day and no one's going to be able to guard you because you're just shooting. So it's just, I don't know. It's just, to me, it's just very counterproductive to him. And while I understood the goal to let him focus on being a scorer, I think the goal wasn't to not prioritize shot selection. And his shot selection has basically maintained the same throughout the season.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I guess the one positive is that Jim Boylan might not be the worst coach in the league. Because did you see that John Boylan?
Oh yeah.
situation. At least our coach isn't racist.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of wish Jim Boylan did say that because it'd be entertaining. It'd be funny. I mean, could you just imagine Jim Boylan after the game just going we got to play foundational basketball. We got to be a group of men and not a group of thugs,
I don't know, man. He's too busy smiling after the podium. Yeah. After every loss at the podium, smiling hey, we lost. Yeah. I'm so happy.
He's a happy guy.
I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah, he's a happy guy. When you have job security and your bosses won't fire you no matter how bad you are, it's a good day. You're making $1 million this year or maybe $1.5 million, and you're living in a big city and you're not good at your job, but hey, you're still employed. So it's a good day to be Jim Boylan, right? I don't know.
This is the most money he's ever made. He's just whatever. I'm just taking advantage of it, and I'm gonna ride it out. He's bought a bunch of bonds and things and saved it. He hasn't spent a penny of it. That's why we see him eating cold cereal for breakfast.
Cold cereal.
That's why he's living in a small, tiny room.
Yeah.
I'm not spending any of this money. I'm saving it all because I know I'm never gonna get another head coaching job after this.
Yeah. This is the only, to me, I think Jim Boylan is not gonna get another opportunity to be an NBA coach.
Oh, that's yeah. No doubt. He's going back to an assistant coach somewhere.
Yeah, he'll be a good assistant coach somewhere. I mean, maybe he'll even go back to San Antonio. Who knows? But I don't ever see a team looking at Jim Boylan saying, all right, this guy needs to be the head coach going forward. It's just It's just, I don't know. It's like, you look around the league right now, and let's pick a team like Washington. Washington has been beating some good teams lately. And they've been doing it without Bradley Beal, without John Wall. They traded Otto Porter for nothing, basically. I mean, it's like you try and put two and two together, and it's just like, well, they don't have a lot of talent, so how are they capable of beating a team that's really good? Well, coaching can make a difference in that scenario. And I think that's why a lot of people are looking at this team, and it's like, sure, there are valid flaws about this team. This absolutely isn't a perfect roster, and we definitely may, in fact, have overrated what's here, but there's definitely a line that this team hasn't reached. And I think that's just because of who the head coach is.
Exactly. And it's funny, you know, we look at the records and we talk about beating good teams. I think the Bulls are what tied with the Cavs and yeah. Let me see here. The Cavs and the Warriors as the only teams that have not beat a team over more than once. I only have one win against a team over 500.
One. Yes, one. And that was when the Clippers sat Kawhi Leonard. They sat Lou Williams. Nope, I don't think Patrick Beverley played either. And that was their fifth game in seven nights.
Yeah. So they're 1-14 against teams over 500. Cavs are 1-18. And then the Warriors are also 1-14.
Yeah. Well, the good news, though, the good news is the Bulls do get to play the Pistons on Saturday.
That is true. It's hard to sweep a team, though. That's the fourth time, right?
This is the fourth time. This is the last time they'll get to play the Detroit Pistons. It'll be in Detroit, and the Bulls are probably going to win.
And unfortunately, though, it is the second half of a back-to-back. They play Indiana, so.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, okay,
baby. Tough Indiana. I think, did I see Oladipo was going to be back, right?
Oladipo's coming back on the 29th against the Bulls.
Oh, it's 29th. Okay, thought it was. I just saw that he was coming back, and I'm like, "Oh, we play the Pacers this Friday," so I thought he was coming back this Friday. Yeah, I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I think he comes back the 29th against the Bulls. I think that's a home game for Indiana, so that could be fun for the Pacers. That could be fun. So the Bulls get to play the Pistons on Saturday. So what's your temperature check? Are you thinking the Bulls are going to end this five-game losing streak by Saturday?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think they'll lose both these games. It's going to be a seven-game losing streak. Because, again, we'll put it this way. Because it's in Detroit again, right? Yeah. So we're not going to have Wendell. Don't forget that.
Yeah. That's right.
Always. Now I remember that. Wendell, no Wendell, and Drummond's going to feast.
Oh, man. Lowry's got to get more boards.
Does need to get more boards, but man, he's probably the biggest reason this rebuild has gone so bad.
Yes, because
you expected coming into this season him taking a step, and some people thought All-Star, you know, and you and I both at least thought like he could give you efficient 20 points, 9 rebounds, 10 rebounds. And he's at times not even been a functional starter.
Yeah. Lowry is, it's weird because, as you mentioned, Lauri Markkanen is, his numbers are starting to come back around. You know, at least offensively, his shot is coming back. So, I mean,
a little bit.
I mean, he's still shooting 34%, we'll give him 35. He's basically shooting about 35% from three. But, you know, in December, he shot 42% from three, and he shot 50% from the field. And it seems like it's coming back some, but we're still looking at a player who we think is a little bit more flawed than we thought previously. And that's because, again, the defense, the rebounding, it doesn't seem like he has that aggression in him. You know, we saw it some in that Charlotte game to start the season. But we've rarely seen it since then. Now he played well against Dallas, but
he did. But here's another thing I'll say in his defense is Boylan, like odd times he'll just sit him for a long stretch. Like I think he sat him for like 12 minutes straight again the Pelicans again.
Yeah.
I mean, he did have foul trouble, I think, right? Did he have foul trouble? I can't remember. I think
Lowry had like four. He had like four fouls.
Let me see.
Or was that against the Pelicans?
He had five fouls. Okay. Maybe he did have foul trouble. I can't remember. But yeah, I don't know. Like, there's times that he sits them too long and he kind of cools off. But there's other times where Lowry just, I feel like he's also just doing like what he normally does and just kind of stands around and accepts it just being a spot up shooter. And, you know, I saw somebody on Twitter mention like the Bulls need to run their offense through Lowry because LaVine is a flawed first option. And I'm thinking, it's like, okay, sure, LaVine is a flawed first option, but your solution is to run the offense through a guy who is more flawed? Like a guy that can't create for himself or his teammates. Who does that? How is that realistic and smart and reasonable? That doesn't make any sense.
So here's the thing. In any sport where you can get a ball, you can get the ball to a player, football, basketball, if you give that player, like, if we're talking about the Chicago Bears, if we threw the ball to Javon Wims 30 times a game, Javon Wims would put up all-star numbers, or Pro Bowl numbers, probably. We're giving him the volume. If we let Lauri Markkanen shoot, like, 25 times a game and ran the offense to him, he'd probably put up numbers, but what does it mean is the thing. And as you're basically saying, and I agree, it's empty because your team's not better for it. It's just pumping up someone's numbers individually. Zach LaVine is a flawed offensive player, absolutely. But the thing about Zach LaVine, at least, is that his playmaking and shot creation, as we all know, can win you games. And his talent clearly shows at a variety of times. Lauri Markkanen does not really do that. And, you know, as you mentioned, he has a heavy tendency to just accept what's going on and not really do anything about it. Not really moving without the basketball, not really looking engaged into what's going on, just kind of standing behind the perimeter and just chilling. He's done that a ton this season. So it's just like, yeah, I'm like you. Why would we run the offense through Lowry right now? He's done nothing to indicate that we should run the offense through him.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I don't know. We'll see what happens in the next two games. I'm thinking they're both going to be losses, but you never know. The Pistons, if Derek's going to be sitting too, who knows? They kind of struggle without Derek offensively at times too.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
So their next, after we get done with the Pistons game, the next games after that, and I think we probably talked about this on the previous episode, but they are at Boston, which is probably going to be a massacre. Washington at Philadelphia, which no Embiid, but probably not going to look good. Then they play Cleveland, and then they're at Milwaukee. So if they lose these next two, I have them losing at least three of the next five after that. And it may be, and I could absolutely see Washington beating this team. I think they'll beat Cleveland, though.
Yeah, I mean, about the same. They could maybe beat Washington at home. Yeah, they play Sixers. Cleveland at home is probably a win. Yeah, it's tough to say. This team, I think we'll find out a lot more about this team in the next two games. Like I said, I'm fearing not having Wendell. And if we see, like, just them get completely, like, pushed around and they end up giving up, like, 130 points, like they did against the Pelicans, they give them 123. But, like, if they give up that many points to a team like the Pelicans at home, even though they're on the road, what are the Pelicans off average this season? They average 113 a game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like the Pelicans are some kind of like, I mean, they're a good offensive team. They do put up points, but that is 10 points above their season average.
Yeah, it's
so
it's gonna get tough, man. I'm just looking at some of these stretches in January. There's a stretch where they have San Antonio at Indiana, at Brooklyn, at Toronto, New Orleans, Philadelphia at Washington. And then there's a stretch in March where oh my Lord, it's so this is a long stretch. And at Miami, Boston, Miami, at San Antonio, at Houston, Denver, Philadelphia, the Knicks, at Utah, at Denver, at Phoenix, at Lakers, at Clippers. It's just, oh my goodness. This is going to get, without Wendell, this is going to get bad. Like, it's, we're talking about this Pelicans game as being a low. Oh my God. There are some games in there that look terrifying. Oof. Yeah, I don't know. It's not looking good right now. But it's January and we got about close to four. We're coming up on the halfway point, but yeah, it's not looking good.
Not at all. Not at all.
Anything to add before we wrap this one up?
No, not really. We'll see. Like I said, we'll see what happens in the next two games, and we'll see if that, you know, if anything, you know, comes up as far as with movement on the roster. I guess we won't find out much in that regards in the next week, but we'll see how that turns out. I'm just hoping that they can make some of these games not as ugly without Wendell.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how many trade rumors the Bulls have attached to them. Now it's becoming clear that they are going to be, or that they at least should be, sellers. So it's going to be interesting to see which players are getting attention, which players are not, and if the Bulls do plan on moving anybody by the deadline. I mean, I'm sure Dunn could be an interesting piece for a contender, low contract, good defender. Satoransky, maybe. Thad Young, maybe. I don't know. There's some interesting parts here. The Bulls don't really have a ton of long-term deals, so they are a team that looks very – that has a lot of tradable parts right now, so should be interesting.
That's true. And then for the Pacers game, really quick, Casey's just tweeted, Malcolm Brogdon back and Domantas Sabonis knee both listed as questionable versus the Bulls.
Okay.
So that could be something, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think Pacers should win that game.
They probably still will win that game, yeah.
they should win that game. If the Pacers don't win that game, then they should look in the mirror for a second. Because you
judge themselves.
Yes, judge yourself if you don't beat this Bulls team. But that is episode 70 of Bulls Gold. Check us out on Twitter at Bulls Gold. Check us out on iTunes, Spotify, any podcast platform. Like, subscribe, give us a review, rate us 5 stars, do all of that. And we'll be back soon for the next episode. For Salim Sudwala, I'm Edward Schuler. This has been episode 70 of Bulls Gold, and we will see you later, Bulls fans.